This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Frankie Corrado, Dave Festruck of the Toronto Star. Get into these Bruins signings a little bit later in the hour. I'll have a comment or two on the Huberto signing. I missed out on that chat on Friday. But all of a sudden, we got some action. You know, there's still some guys out there. Nazem Kadri, like, what's up? What are you doing here, Nazem?
That's weird, man.
Where are you going?
We're like a month and a half away from camp. Like, you always go. Like, some guys will stay somewhere for the whole summer. Some guys, but most guys will get there like Labor Day. And that's not that far away. Like, you got to be kind of making your plans as far as what you're doing in September now.
Absolutely. So, Naz, not that we're telling him anything he's not aware of. It is his life and his career. But you might want to snap out of it. Come on. Where are you going?
Well, it's got to be a stressful summer for him, right?
Big time.
I mean, wouldn't he have loved to have, you know, signed a big deal, you know, a couple of weeks ago and, you know, been relaxing at this point, knowing he was going to get paid for years to come, to be sitting around waiting for GMs to move money and make transactions to fit in your transaction? That's got to be an uneasy feeling, because they're, you know, it's not easy to move money in this league, as we've all figured out by now.
No, and I wonder what happened, because they essentially had just like an open boardroom to all the teams to just make us your best pitch, and then we're going to pick from there. Like, essentially like an offer date on a house here in Toronto. Like, how does nothing materialize from that? Like, I've never really seen that happen before, where you just said, bring me your best offer, and then we're sitting here on August 8th and you haven't accepted anything, or you haven't got anything you like. I don't understand it. It's weird to me.
Yeah, my assumption would be, you know, we have to move things before we can give you our best option. You know,
right.
Like we're in the room with you. Yeah. Hey, this is really cool. But and I would, my understanding is a couple of teams made offers and he said no.
Yeah.
You know, and then they moved on, and maybe there were teams he wasn't interested in, and he's been linked maybe to Calgary. Does the Huberto deal change that? Maybe. You know, there's talk that Mackenzie Weegar may be talking long term. Is there still money for him? He was linked recently to maybe Boston. Well, now with Bergeron and Krejci coming back, where is he playing and where's the money for Naz? You know, if it's the Islanders, then it's Lamoriello, and you know, he can't show up until opening night.
Yeah.
You know, like it's a magic trick.
Exactly. By the way, look who we signed.
Blues happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I don't understand, because so I was thinking, like, with Kadri, I wasn't going to be surprised if it was $9 million plus, just because of how well of a season he had and the fact that he won a Stanley Cup. Like, I wasn't going to be surprised, but I probably thought that might have been a little bit of an overpayment at the time. I don't get the sense that that's even in the realm of possibility anymore.
I don't think
at
so
this
either.
Stage.
Yeah. I don't think so either.
Hard to imagine who's going to be able to afford that at this point. I mean, what are the, you know, the Islanders have obviously been in the conversation. There's also that speculation that's been going on a long time that Joe Sakic will eventually find a way to move the necessary pieces around to make room.
Essentially,
to
Sam
bring
Girard,
him back.
Right? Like, that's the only one that really makes sense. You just want a cup without him, and he makes $5 million. That's your necessary money to sign Kadri. But I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to move money. Leafs have been trying to do it since the season ended.
We believe
that that's what they're trying to do.
We're led to believe.
Yeah.
And there's another guy like Rasmus Sandin. There's nothing on him. Like, Rasmus, where are you and what are you up to right now?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like – I mean, maybe it comes out of nowhere. The Leafs are prone to do that, but it doesn't seem likely. So, anyway, we'll get into the Bergeron-Krejci deal, Huberto, a little bit later in the hour. The Jays are back in action in Baltimore after getting a split in Minnesota. Minnesota ends up winning the season series, so they end up – that'll be the tiebreak, you know, going Minnesota's way if it gets to that point. But there's some, you know, weird action going on in the American League, because the Yankees have really been playing poorly.
Yeah.
Like, really, we're talking for the better part of 6 weeks, they have played poorly. Now, they still have a 2.06 run differential, which is outrageous. Like, 2.06 is outrageous. But, you know, like, the Jays are, I still don't think the Jays have their eyes set on the Yankees, but the point being is the Yankees have not been playing, or they're a 2.01 run differential. The Yankees have not been playing great recently, and if they are closer to the last 6 weeks as opposed to the first 2.5 months, What are you talking about in the American League?
I don't know, but I can't see that. I can't see that this is the Yankees team we've been waiting for all along. Just with the body of work that they've had, the way they're mashing the ball, like I think their pitching has let them down recently. And even like Montas, the guy that they picked up, he got lit up. And I was actually watching that thinking, okay, good thing the Jays didn't get Montas. Imagine, you know, they spent legitimate assets on this guy in the first game he gets shelled. So I would imagine it's just a blip in the radar. But like you say, like you just never know, like the way the course of a season goes with these things.
I mean, the Yankees have lost 5 in a row. They're under 500 over the course of, you know, like a, we're talking like 45 games now. They're, what are they, 21-24 or something the last 45 games? That's a long run of them not playing great baseball. It's not a week or two. This is weeks now. And if they are coming back to earth, I don't think they're this level of where the Yankees – I don't think they're over the course of 162 moving forward. They'd only win 75 games.
Yeah.
But they're probably not the same team that was on pace to win 112.
No.
You know, if they're somewhere in between that, then how scared should you be if you're other teams in the American League?
They were due – for a slowdown, obviously. They came out historically hot, right? They were threatening to be one of, if not the best regular season team in the history of the sport. So, you know, to maintain that pace was kind of ridiculous considering the preseason prognostications for this team, guys, were not particularly flattering, right? There were a lot of people saying that this team had lost its swagger. They weren't as scary as they should be as the notorious evil empire. So, you're right, though, Hayes. Like, you know, they've shown some cracks in the armor here, and it's going to be up to them to figure it out. They're still on pace to project.
They're still going
to
win the American League East. But
yeah, and they're still on pace to get 99 wins. So this is going to be a formidable team. But maybe sometimes you peak a little too early, and if they can't kind of get it back on the rails, maybe they won't be as menacing as we previously thought when the playoffs roll around.
Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What do you make of where the American League is at this point, Steve? Like, if the Yankees have come back to earth, Houston's still a very good team, clearly. But how scary is the American League for any team that happens to get in?
Yeah, look, I think the American League, Houston's really good because their starting pitching is so good. You know, the Yankees, you know, that's some part for me has been their vulnerability. They pitch better than I thought they had a right to expect them to. But it seems like maybe that's leveling off. Severino's on the injured list on the 60-day IL. You guys mentioned Montas didn't throw all that well. Then, you know, Tyone does not scare me in a playoff game at all. Jameson Tyone. And Nestor Cortez, look, he's been great, but I'll take a right-hand dominant lineup against him and feel like I've got a chance. And plus, he's not quite as sharp now as he was early. His innings workload is hitting him a little bit. And Garrett Cole has not had very good starts his last couple times out. I think that you know, there's some vulnerability. Plus, their bullpen has taken some major losses right now. Now, they've had other guys who have stepped up and been pretty productive, but none of them have been big-time playoff pitchers either. And so, well, there's a vulnerability there. Now, it's a 9.5-game lead. Is there time to make up 9.5 games? For the Jays, they'd have to keep playing really good baseball, and they're going to need a collapse from the Yankees. But it can happen. Because the Yankees, you know, they've lost 5 in a row. They do have starting pitching woes. The more you do that, the more you expose your bullpen, and it can lead to more issues overall. So there's potentially, you know, an opportunity there. You know, the Blue Jays, and for them, if they could just get within 6 games, then what happens is you focus on chasing somebody instead of worrying about who's chasing you. That perspective, that change in the direction in which you're looking as a team, is a significant thing, right? Nothing worse than looking over your shoulders because all you do is think about, well, what if we lose? You know, what happens? Who's closing in on us? Instead of, boy, if we win, we can catch the Yankees. And I think that that's where they've got to maintain a focus. And so, you know, they're not quite at that point yet where they can taste it, but, you know, they get another, you know, they win the next 3, the Yankees lose the next 3, and now you're starting to feel like something, you know, interesting can happen.
Well, I got to believe the Baltimore Orioles are now ecstatic about the way the schedule worked out in terms of them, you know, chasing the Jays. The Yankees are a different story. But because of COVID, because of certain delays and just the way that the schedule worked out, the Jays in Baltimore will play 15 times the rest of the way. 15 of the final 58 are Baltimore, Toronto. How significant could this end up being, Steve?
Well, it could be significant, but I personally believe that the Orioles, at some point, the bubble's going to burst, the balloon's going to burst, and so I think there's a real chance that, you know, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. I think it could turn out that the Blue Jays play the Orioles at just the right time because they're due to fall apart a bit. They're not this good. So I honestly look at it as an opportunity for the Jays, not a disadvantage that they've got them. And I don't look at it. I mean, sure, I can understand why the Orioles might look at that as an advantage, but I think that they're way over their skis for the talent they have on the roster. And it's a great story, and I love that they're doing great, but it will come back down to earth.
So, Steve, some injury concerns with the Blue Jays. Obviously, George Springer would be first on that list, the troublesome elbow injury. If you're looking at that as a GM, what do you see in there, and how much are you concerned that this is going to be something that lingers until the end of the season and perhaps through the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm concerned about it. I was surprised they didn't right away put him on the injured list. I think that this is something when one, he couldn't throw, and then two, where it affected him when he was swinging or even just on the follow-through on a swing, that was concerning to me. So I think it's the right thing to put him on the injured list. They've got to settle it down. I'll be surprised if they get a lot of outfield play from him from the rest of the year. It sure feels to me like, you know, they're destined for him to be a DH. And thankfully, they did the right thing at the deadline. And, you know, things sort of got to be fluid. And so they found themselves, Merrifield looking place in center field, which I think was really important. So, look, they were going to have to get a DH if Springer was able to play. So the fact that instead that the guy that might be a DH is going to have to play center field and Springer is in a position to have to DH is not the end of the world.
Steve, speaking of Merrifield, like, how nice of a fit has he been on this team? Because it seems like he plays the way that Schneider wants his teams to play. Like, he's got a lot of energy. He's very aggressive. What have you seen from him since he's joined the Jays?
Yeah, I think that I did a breakdown on what he was as a player. Like, he's an old school guy. He's a dirt ball guy. He's a speed guy. And we saw in Sunday all of that come into play. I mean, the tagging up from second to third and the throw from Buxton, where he just beat the throw, and then obviously the play at the plate for the go-ahead run. And so he has been, and I really do think the change of scenery, he was so due to get out of Kansas City. I just, there's only so long you can take, being the leader of a team that's getting their head beat in. And I think being able to get a fresh start on a team that has hopes and aspirations where he's invigorated by some of the young guys on the roster, I think is huge for the Jays. And I think it's going to make a big difference for Merrifield as well.
Where do you stand on the play at the plate in the 10th yesterday?
So I think the umpire in New York got it 100% right, that the rule states that if the catcher is not in possession of the baseball, he is not allowed to block the plate. And Sanchez was standing in front of the plate when he didn't have the baseball and was blocking it. Now, I think the interpretation in New York was proper. I think the rule needs to be adjusted, though, and it should be adjusted in a way that says that if the throw takes the catcher into the baseline, where in order to catch it, he has to be in a position in front of the plate, that he should be allowed to do that. Now the other thing, remember, Merrifield could have lowered his shoulder and Pete Rosed him in that moment. I mean, the rule doesn't say you can't have a collision. The rule says you can't go out of your way to have a collision. And so I think that in that case, Merrifield could have run him over. But I think so I think the umpire's got it right. I would tweak the rule because both that play and then the play in the Pirates-Orioles game yesterday, the throw took the catcher into the front of the plate, and he had to catch it. And what the rule is, they're making it seem like that the catcher's got to make like a wide receiver on the sideline trying to make a catch and then make a tag to avoid, blocking the plate. And I don't think that that's fair to the catcher. So I think it's one of those things they should tweak, but I think the umpire's got it right.
Steve, we were having this conversation before you came on the air, and my co-host, you know, Brian Hayes here, who often rails against the vagaries of instant replay, was saying, you know, the moment was stolen there. It was a great moment. Tough call. It's a subjective call. Do we really need to be handing over subjective calls to video replay, given the excitement of that particular play in baseball?
Yes, we do. Because the bottom line is the excitement is secondary to the right call being made. I mean, I'd rather – so here's the thing. If I am the Blue Jays, do I want to lose that game because the umpire made the wrong call? Just because it's more exciting that they gunned down the run of the play? No. And the way I look at it is if the right call is made and it costs me a game, I'm honestly willing to live with that as long as that I know that when the call's wrong, that it could be reversed to help me win a game. I just want whatever happens on the field to be the true play. And so I still am all in favor of instant replay and far more in favor of getting calls right than the excitement of the moment being stolen away.
Yeah, we've had this argument so many times, you and I, Steve. You know where I stand on it. I understand where you're coming from as a GM, but if I'm coming at it as the commissioner, and it is entertainment. That's what it is. It's about this is an entertainment business. You are asking people to spend money and time. They don't want moments like that stolen because the 30 GMs live and die by every pitch. It's not good for business. It's not. There's not enough action in the game. We yell and scream all the time. It's home runs and strikeouts. Finally, action. A play at the plate. There is maybe no greater entertaining moment in pro sports, period. Football, hockey, baseball, basketball, play at the plate in the 10th inning, and you cannot give an emotion. You have to stop, wait for people in New York to tell you how you can feel about it. It's awful for business. Awful.
Yeah. Although it turned into a great temper tantrum.
It did.
We got the excitement.
Human element.
We got the excitement. We did. I mean, honestly, and then the post game, that was even better. And
yes,
for us in talk radio, we've gotten a whole day's worth of fodder out of it. So, come on, man. Be careful what you wish for. What are we going to talk about if they take this stuff away from us?
Yeah, I do love a good meltdown. Rocco Baldelli, man. He went old school on that one. I mean, how would you grade his meltdown?
He was outrageous. I mean, you know, but the thing is, he went too far when he said that, you know, it's the worst call ever. Like Armando Galarraga would beg to differ,
right?
The near perfect game that he lost, and Jeffrey Mayer and the catch he made in the outfield where the umpires, you know, they made the call that it wasn't interference. I mean, there have been a lot more egregious calls than that. And he said, you know, both teams are upset by this. I'm thinking, yeah, I don't think really that the Blue Jays are too upset by the outcome of this. So, you know, he knows that his team is not running away with the Central. And that they're going to have to fight their way in, and the White Sox haven't made a run yet, and there's some vulnerability there. So he knows that one game could make a huge difference for his team.
If you were Ross Atkins, would you have any reason to believe, or should you have any reason to believe, that either Nate Pearson or Julian Merriweather can help you down the stretch?
No, I don't think you can plan for that at all. I think that is just icing on the cake if you get it. But I think that what I would be doing, you know, one thing you can do is you can make minor league trades. So I would have scouts looking for the best left-handed reliever in the minor leagues right now and make whatever deal I can do to get him. And I might do a couple of them and just bring him into AAA and then take a look and see if I can find a way to bring him up to my club. But I, you know, with Mays' injury, I really am shopping right now to try to find that guy. I really want to try to find some help in the bullpen. And I want somebody who's pitching rather than hoping somebody's going to come back from an injury.
Steve, do you foresee a situation like in the next games coming up where Mays is going to be out, where the Jays are going to get burnt by not having a lefty in the bullpen?
It can happen. I mean, it's possible. And, you know, I know Jake McGee's out there, but he got released from the Giants, he got released from the Brewers, two other teams that were looking for left-handed bullpen help, and they both, you know, tried him out and he couldn't get anybody out. So I think it's wishful thinking that he's going to dramatically change for them. But, you know, they have right-handers that can get left-handers out. I just like having a left-hander to force the other team to burn some of their bench, you know, to be able to, you know, bring in the left-hander. They've got to go to the bench, burn the right-handed hitter to bring him in. And, you know, even if it's in the sixth or seventh inning, so that by the time later in the game, the matchup might be better served where you're bringing a right-hander in. They've already burned, you know, the hitter and taken him out of the game. And so, it's not an ideal situation. They do have right-handers who can be effective, but that's what teams that don't have a left-hander say. Oh, but we've got right-handers who can get left-handers out, so we're okay. We're not bothered by it too much. I always wanted three left-handers in my bullpen. I wanted to cause the opposing team to start to flip their lineup around as early as the sixth inning. If my starter's coming out at 5 1/3, I wanted a left-hander to come in right there if he's a right-handed starter and get the other team. Let him burn a guy in the sixth inning. And then, then I can bring in a right-hander. Then I can bring in another left-hander. Let him burn another guy in the eighth inning so that, they're going through their bench earlier and trying to work the matchups. So I always wanted that sort of depth and balance, but the best laid plans, it doesn't always work that way. I would have thought that a guy like Andrew Chapin, Gregory Soto, guys like that from the Tigers might have been targets. Jake Diekman went from the Red Sox to the White Sox. But I would have thought that maybe they could have found a left-handed reliever out there in the market. But I got to tell you, there weren't as many relievers traded this year as I've seen in the past.
Who do you think sent a bigger message this weekend, the Mets to the Braves or the Dodgers to the Padres?
I think the Mets to the Braves. I do. I think there's more vulnerability there. The Braves have played the best since June 1st. I think that, the Braves, going back to my days, have always had the Mets number. And so I think it was a huge statement. Plus, it took their lead to 6.5, where now I think, 15.5 for the Dodgers over the Padres. The Padres are 2-8 this year against the Dodgers. They've not pitched, not played very well. Now, Manny Machado's response to that was great, though. He's like, I don't care. It's just a regular season game. And they said, well, are you concerned? He said, no, I'm not concerned. They said, why aren't you concerned? He said, because I'm bleeping Manny Machado. Like, I thought, that's the greatest thing ever. The most confidence I've ever heard. Like, I wish I could be like that. Why are you not concerned? Because I'm bleeping Speed Phillips. That's why. I mean, Manny Machado, I'm like he's my hero now for that. It was amazing.
That is a great comment. And I'm not sure if the owner feels the same way right now in San Diego, but I like it. I like the swag. All right, Steve, great catching up with you, buddy. We'll do it later in the week.
Okay, great. Thank you, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our TSN MLB analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota. And check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com. 20-4 was the aggregate score.
That's
Dodgers Padres.
That's
20-4 over three games.
Like, the Dodgers have beaten the Padres now, like, series wise, series matchups, 166 out of the last 167. Like, that's just a complete spanking.
Wow. Wow. Is that true? That sounds almost impossible.
I mean,
they have been spanking them forever. They have owned the Padres forever.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But, yeah, doubling down on the swagger when the Dodgers are dominating you for Manny Machado. Yeah. That's a bold move.
That's how Brian kind of walks around here at TSN Studios. Bleeping Brian Hayes.
Do I? I don't know. I don't know if I've been on the wrong side of a beatdown that badly around TSN, although I probably did at some point.
Speaking of a beatdown, we got to get to this video. Maybe we'll get into it after the break a certain friend of mine absolutely roasts me on the pregame show.
Okay, yes, we will play that. We will get into it. To put into perspective again, just to cap off where the Padres are at, 15.5 games back of the Dodgers. They are closer to the Rockies, who are 48-63, than they are the Dodgers, who are 75-33. And they were the ones that went out there and acquired everybody at the deadline.
Yeah.
And now they've lost four in a row. They're in the third wild card spot. They're holding on for dear life.
Dude, and their payroll, like in a few years, their payroll went from like $70 million to over $200 million.
Yep. Like, and they better get in because, they're in the second wild card, but the Phillies are behind them. The Cardinals are 3.5 back. Giants are probably done, but man, it's not good. Not good for the Padres. But they still have Manny Machado and confidence and swag, and Juan Soto's there. It's all good. It's all good. All right, so we'll come back. We'll play this clip you've been teasing about a pregame of the past. So we'll get into that. The Bergeron Krejci deals down in Boston. What does it mean for the Bruins? What does it mean for the East? The Maple Leafs, how they might tie in on all this. And back into the Kevin Durant bombshell, if you want to call it that, reports out there from Shams Charania that he's told the owner it's either me or the coach and the GM. And we got some audio from Pete Rose in the booth. which was never a good idea, and it didn't turn out to be a good idea. So we'll get to that a little bit later on as well. Frankie Corrado's in here, Dave Festrek of the Star, and Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. So a quick birthday shout-out to Sidney Crosby. He's 35. Sid is 35. I thought I saw that online today.
Sid the Kid.
That was yesterday. 8-7, man. His birthday is
yesterday,
August the 7th, 87.
Right.
1987.
Yesterday.
That's the whole thing. 8-7, 8-7.
Yep. So there you go. Sidney Crosby, 35 years old, man. It comes quick.
Yeah,
before you know it, man. Sid the Kid is just middle-aged. And
he's not slowing down, man.
No,
he's got some good years ahead of him still. And that team can still contend.
I think they probably can, too. They did some pretty good work. Like, they kept Malkin. Gino's never going to play 82 again, but Letang's still top of his game. Jarry's a good goalie. They got good pieces down there.
Jeff Carter's there. Like, they still have – they have a deep team, and they plug and play. Like, that's been their MO for years. It's like we have the core, and we build around it, and they find guys. Like, they find guys who can fit into their cap structure, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the key, right? Like, to be able to keep that team together and to get – Malkin and Letang to take, you know, what basically amount to hometown discounts to stay on board. And you heard how Sidney Crosby was very influential in urging those guys to keep the band together, so to speak. It's the only way to roll, right, if you're serious about trying to be a contender in your middle-aged years as a player in this league.
Well, it's pretty friendly. And so I was, you know, I don't know if you guys ever do this. Like, I have a smart TV. It's got YouTube on it. So I just kind of go out there and it's basically golf, hockey, or dogs, and you kind of just get lost in a rabbit hole, and you kind of see what the recommendations are on YouTube. And this morning, I got a recommendation for Leafs vs. Oilers pregame show from 2016. And I thought to myself, I go, oh, I was playing in that game. That would be interesting to see. Like, when I wonder what they were talking about in a half-hour pregame show between two of the worst teams in the league that year. And I get about halfway through it, and one of the analysts absolutely roasts me. And I think we have the video clip. Can we play it?
If Connor McDavid can find himself a way to get out there tonight against Frank Corrado and Martin Marincin, he might have a field day out there. I don't know if he can pass 10, but he might give it a shot.
So what's your real over-under? Three and a half?
I think he's getting
on McDavid?
I think he's getting 5 points tonight.
That's a full-on assault.
It's now, that's a shot at Marincin, too. I mean, let's play. Marincin was an anchor for you, Frankie. It's not that's Babcock's problem. He's trying to screw you over playing it with Marty Marincin.
Yeah.
Do we know the game sheet that night? What did McDavid do?
Our buddy was on the money because McDavid did have 5 points that night.
No.
But I don't think I was on for any of them.
Oh, so there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then the O-Dog, he kind of knows what he's talking about.
He knows. Like, the O-Dog knows the game, but I just love how, like, he could have said anything, and he chose to go Frank Corrado and Martin Marincin.
How about the third pairing? Just say that. You know, keep the names out of it. Like, let's keep it
or
civil.
Some of these younger guys. Like, it's a full-on assault
is what it is. Yeah. That's uncalled for.
Yeah.
That hurts. Well, YouTube, what's with that algorithm, too? Like, smarten up, YouTube.
Yeah, what's with that? How did you know? Like, how did they know I was going to watch that, too,
Leave
after
Frankie
seeing it?
Leave Frankie alone, please.
That's a very mean recommendation. It obviously knew you were mentioning the clip, Frankie, but... That's a very mean-spirited way to start your day.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know if I'm more upset that my friend said that about me or that he was right that McDavid was going to get 5 points against us.
Well, what kind of scares me, again, just to dig the knife a little bit further into your back, is that he had five and he wasn't on against you. If he played more against you, maybe he could have hit 10.
Yes.
You know, maybe the O-Dog's kind of saying that. Like, he got five, and like you mentioned, he didn't get a ton of ice time against you and Marty Marincin.
Yeah.
So
maybe.
I'm assuming that game was at home. Was that in Toronto?
No, that was out in Edmonton.
Oh,
we lost with an empty netter.
Change.
No, lost with an empty netter.
Right.
Yeah, it's fun. I actually remember that game. I thought I had a pretty good game.
There
but
you go, Frank.
Few and far between for me, but.
But Frankie, when you're the third pair,
man.
When you're the third pair and Mike Babcock's your coach and you happen to see McDavid come over the boards? Like, is it incumbent upon you to get to the bench as quickly as possible, or how do you approach that situation?
I get the same anxiety that I used to get. As soon as you mentioned it, I could just feel it starting in my esophagus and just working its way up. Essentially, what happens is, like, DJ Smith would whistle with his fingers like this, and if you heard the whistle, it was like, get off as soon as humanly possible. And I heard that whistle quite a bit throughout my 41 games as a Maple Leaf.
Well, hey, listen, man, you're up in the alumni box. The O-Dog might be up there with you, but he's no better than you when you're in that box.
Yeah. Right?
You got the jacket on, you're in there, you play.
Right. We got the chicken penne pesto going.
As you
should.
We'll
have some good times, good people up there.
We have great people up there. Look at me speaking as if I'm an alumni. I've been up there so many times.
But you know what? You know what's funny? Like, you'll walk in there with O and whoever else is in there, Cabrillet, like, you're probably the guy who's the center of the conversation more often than not.
I don't know if I'd go that. I mean, I've been in there with Sittler and, like, Lanny McDonald and stuff. Yeah, listen, people are aware of who I am, what I do. I'm in there with O, generally. So yeah. O's a guy that kind of drags an audience, and we end up talking about the Leafs. And you get a lot of honesty and truth up there in terms of how people feel about the team.
The alumni will tell you exactly
Absolutely.
What needs to go on
yes.
with that team.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, like, it is – you know, something that it's a positive
yes.
that the franchise is in a position they're in today because they have stable ownership. They've got management that's trying to figure out a way to win, but the management treats the players extremely well.
Very well.
It's first class across the board.
Yes.
And you get up to the alumni box, you get a lot of Harold Ballard era Maple Leafs.
Right.
And like, you juxtapose what it would be like to play for the Leafs in the 70s and 80s. Compared to what these Leafs are dealing with today, and not even talking about money.
Yeah.
Although that probably factors into a lot of, you know, analysis as well, where the players were not making nearly as much money, even just relative to where, you know, society was at that point. Just the way that they were treated, the way, you know, how many players took issue with so many different things, and vice versa, the way the team would just throw them out.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always been an issue, I think, with the Leafs that – it's too bad. You know, growing up, I was a Toronto kid. I grew up. I took the TTC to go to the Gardens as a kid. I didn't have any connection whatsoever with Dave Keon. Keon's the best example.
Yeah.
Like, Keon's ranked the number one Leaf of all time. We had these conversations about statues and all that. I could not have been more defined as a Toronto kid that loved hockey and the Leafs and sports. And I had zero connection.
Isn't that crazy? Like, that's
zero.
That is number one.
I couldn't pick him out of a lineup
when
I was 10 years old.
When you look at other franchises, right? You look at the Pens and you look at Mario, and you can go, like, down
the list.
Well,
look at the Habs.
You look at
the
Habs. Exactly,
Montreal,
right?
Montreal, Beliveau and the Richard, they were at every game, it felt like.
Exactly. And they were treated like gods there. And
right.
Keon was like, he was like not around. He wasn't, it was.
And that was because of the Ballard dust-up and the issues there. And anyway, you know, but speaking of contracts and where we're at, and this is an angle that I think is worthy of getting into, because I saw the Huberto deal, and the first thing that struck me is that he gets $10.5 million per year, and Matthew Tkachuk gets $9.5 million. And I hate that that is a part of the evaluation, because salary cap has forced everyone into that position, or many fans into the position. What is the cap? What does it mean?
Yep.
I don't blame players, you know, for getting whatever they can. Huberto has no connection to Calgary. You know, he got traded there. He had leverage because he's a UFA next year. It's also a scarred franchise right now because of what they just went through. So he had leverage. I do take issue with Canadian players, although we'll never know the answer to this, who would take less in the States than they would accept up here. I think there's been examples of that. I cannot definitively tell you that it's a lock. But I think that's happened, and I would say shame on those Canadian players.
Why, though? Why?
Because if you're going to take less to – like, we always talk about the Canadian teams, they can't compete. 30 years without a cup drought, and it's the owners are the issue. The media is the issue. Maybe it's our own Canadian players that are – well, if I go to Tampa, I'll take 9.5, but if I'm coming to Toronto, it's got to be 11. Why? Like, why?
Well,
why would you take less? And
I think
don't give me the taxes and all that crap.
That's part of it, though.
You can get around it. We all know that there's ways that you can get around taxes, and you can store money different ways.
I was talking about this on the course with AK over the weekend, because I think a lot of a lot of the times we talk about the whole tax thing and how there's loopholes. And, yeah, there's certain things you can do as far as, like, making your address different, and that might save you some money on a signing bonus. But in Canada, you can't incorporate yourself as an athlete. So you have virtually zero write-offs. So there's nothing there. And then in the States, as the years have gone on, athletes have lost way more write-offs. Like, when I first started, so that would have been 2013, guys were writing off everything. Oh, you want a 70-inch TV because you need to watch video on it? Write-off. You need running shoes. Like, you could write off suits. Just anything you can imagine was a write-off. And as the years went on, these things got less and less and less, whereas I think now the only thing you can really write off in the States as a player is your agent fees. Like, that's how restricted it's been. In Canada, I don't even think you can write off your agent fees anymore. I know Stewie Gavin, he does, like, a whole bunch of the NHL guys' stuff. Like, he would know better than me. But anyways, I think what players mean, or what they kind of, I guess, the sentiment behind that as far as they need more money in Canada than they do in the States, it's like, given the two options for them to go play in Tampa, a very good team, very good city, very nice way of life, instead of going to play in somewhere like Winnipeg or Calgary or Edmonton, it's like, okay, yeah, I'll take a little less to go play down there because of all these elements. It's like, there are a few more stresses involved as far as playing on a team like that, so you probably want a little more money.
Well, but you don't have to, like, is the point. Like, it's, yes, that, and that, we've just accepted that. We, you know, it's tough up here in Canada, so pay them more, you know. And again, I don't blame players for saying, listen, I'm taking 10-5 here, I'm taking 10-5 there, and whatever. But this idea that Canadian players, not Americans, not Europeans, Canadians will not accept the same from a Canadian team as they would from an American team, I do take issue with that. Like, I find, and then all you're going to say is, oh, I love it up here, it's the best, I'm a Canadian, all I've dreamt about is playing in Canada. No, you didn't. Clearly you didn't, because you put a higher price tag on that.
But that's it. That's on the GMs, though, Hayes.
But, like, I agree, yeah. And that's the point I'm trying to get to.
They need to stay firm on
That's what stood out here. Like, Huberto, again, yeah. I'm not jumping on Huberto, because I don't know what he was demanding in Florida. And, I, you know, again, he just got there, and he's like, you want to meet for dinner and pay me 10-5, fine. I don't blame the player for taking that. What I'm trying to get to, and I got sidetracked there, because I do think I'm making a salient point in terms of Canadian players saying I demand more up here than I do in the States, and that's probably factoring into a lot of the issues up here. But these GMs have this defeatist attitude. Well, we can't compete. We have to overpay. No, you don't. Like,
no.
Negotiate or take a stand. And, like, they do it to themselves up here.
Totally
this
agree.
Idea that we just, well, what do you want out of us?
Well, they need to do it together, though. Because if you're in Calgary and you draw that hard line and say, yeah, I won't pay him above a certain amount because I'm not going to overpay guys, well, maybe someone a little east of you might do it. And then you look at him and you say, really? Like, that's the way it's going to be? Like, you're going to overpay for this guy? So, like, if they're not all doing it together, someone's
never going to happen. You're never going to have collusion among the seven GMs in Canada.
That's why you're always going to have Canadian GMs paying a little more. I think with the 10, sorry, Dave, I think with the 10.5 that Huberto got in Calgary, they probably looked at it and said, we had 10.5 for Johnny Gaudreau, so we still have 10.5, except now it's for you. Do you want to stay here? And I guess, like, if you're Huberto, you're probably expecting that. You probably know in the back of your head that if Calgary came to you with 9.5 and said, this is our very best offer, you probably look at them and said, actually, no, it isn't, because I know you had another million per year to spend on Johnny Gaudreau, so why don't you go back and change the number for me? Like, the cat's out of the bag there.
No, exactly. But, I mean, look, you can't – this is not just about whether that the Tampa Bay Lightning have constructed what they've constructed, right? They were – under Stevie Yzerman and Julien Brisebois, you know, after that – they've been able to convince that core to get together and say, we want to be together, and this is what it's going to mean. And you've got to have that internal salary cap. I mean, you know, Dean Lombardi, who coached GM those two Kings Stanley Cup teams, used to talk about that, about how, hey, he wanted to go in the locker room and say to guys, hey, I'm just going to put all the money out on the table here, and you guys divvy it up. Because if you want to be a Stanley Cup team, that's the way it's going to have to be. Because if we just start paying guys as much as they want, it's not going to work. And you know, you can't really say, hey, it's just because there's a beach down the road that the Tampa Bay Lightning are good, Hayes, and because they're not in Canada. It's because they've been managed really well, and they've had right. buy-in from their best players.
Well, and look what the team south of them has decided to take that and use it in their own negotiation with Tkachuk. Like, they basically told them, they said, Kucherov, Vasilevsky, Point, they all got 9-5. That's what you're getting.
Right.
I think that's exactly what happened. And Tkachuk said, okay, fine. Like, that's how I'm going to operate. And, like, look at Boston. Boston's got a great history of this. No one skips camp. There's no concerns about offer sheets. It's just, this is how we operate. You love being a Bruin. We love having you here. So this is how it's going to work. And
right.
yet,
if you got Patrice
here,
Bergeron on board, which he is.
What a deal that is.
And guys have left money on the table in Boston for years.
Of course they have. Bergeron's done it his whole career. Yeah. Just did it again. Like, this wasn't a negotiation. This is what we have. If you want to play for us, this is what we can give you. Bergeron said, I'll take it.
And it was it was probably friendly, too. Like, it was like, let's try and finish something off here because.
Just like Chara's last year.
Exactly. Everyone's kind of getting to that point where we're not sure what direction it's going to go. We have another chance at it for a year, maybe two.
But you have to have confidence.
Yeah.
As an organization,
right.
you have to have confidence. This is how we operate. If you don't like it, sorry. You know, like that's how it started in Tampa. Was Stamkos, we can give you 8-5. Sorry. That's it. Go meet with Toronto. Go meet
right.
with everyone else.
Yep.
Give us a shout. We're not calling you again.
Yep.
We are confident in who we are and what we are. And guess what happened? Stamkos said, I like that confidence, and I want to be a part of that, and I'm coming back. And it set the foundation for everything. And it has to happen up here at some point. Somewhere. Maybe it did in Edmonton. Like, when you look at it, Draisaitl, 8 years at 8.5 is an unbelievable deal. Even McDavid signed it for 8 at 12.5.
Giving money back. He gave some money back.
And he decided to give some money back, which I think was a PR move, but a brilliant one. Brilliant one.
Yeah.
Well, and that was always the thing, like, not to relitigate, you know, Kyle Dubas' negotiation skills, because we've done it a million times, and the reviews are not positive when it comes to the core four, but... You know, if John Tavares, you know, take another look at that and you think, okay, well, you said it was your lifelong dream to come back to Toronto and play for your childhood team. Well, if it really was that, wasn't that a leverage point for the general manager? Wasn't that a point where, you know, Kyle Dubas could have looked into the future
that
and said, John,
chance.
In theory, yes. I just think
Shanahan too. Let's not forget, like, Shanahan was in that room.
Yes,
he was in that room.
The only issue with that situation was you were damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? If you're Shanahan and Dubas, because you had a hometown kid who finally wanted to come home, right? And what if you didn't show enough interest in him? It would have been the PR would have been, look, another Toronto guy wants to come home and they don't want to even have him, or they don't want to pay him what he deserves. And so, you know, you have to bite the bullet on that earlier on, but maybe now people are saying, okay, maybe that would have been a better decision. You look at it, you know, the way they did it, where they signed Tavares and they got a great, you know, glowing reviews. You brought him home. You brought the guy home who wanted to come home, and now we look at it and say, well, he probably makes a couple million too much.
Well, exactly, but again, it comes down to confidence. If you're confident and you have a plan, then it doesn't matter what everyone on the outside is yelling and screaming about, because what is the core truth of sports is if it works, everyone's still going to love you. They're still going to praise you. Like, you know, you're right, Frankie, that was the case, that the Leafs, I think, genuinely wanted to be in there, but Tavares picked them as much as they picked him.
Yeah.
That everything else was just noise. He always wanted to be a Leaf. He was always coming back. He was gearing up to come home, and that's exactly what happened. And if there was ever a time, even though, again, it doesn't matter now because it's done and it's over, to say, listen, we love you, John, but we want you to be our Steven Stamkos. He just took 8-5. We'll give you 8 at 9, 9.5. Set the tone for us. Here's the C. Didn't happen. It didn't happen. And, you know, I'd be curious to know if Tavares would have accepted it, you know, or if Tavares, or if that's what they put on the table and Tavares pushed back.
Look,
said, I'm not coming for less.
It depends on
everybody likes.
The other offers, like San Jose. Like, what
was
everyone
mentioned San Jose.
Right?
Like,
well, it was a real big offer for sure, Frankie.
Of course,
if he wanted to go to San, my point would have been, if he wanted to go to San Jose,
go ahead.
Then go to San Jose.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah.
They don't wear Maple Leafs on their sweaters in San Jose. They're not in the center of the hockey.
He wasn't
universe.
Going to San Jose.
Exactly.
He was coming here.
Yeah.
He was coming here.
Exactly.
And I think Yzerman knew Stamkos was coming back, and he had confidence, and he said, this is what we got. You want to play with Kucherov? We got this Point kid coming, this Vasilevsky dude. You love Coop.
Hedman's
this is what
great.
We got.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's got to happen. Like, one of the got to stop with the defeatist. Well, what do you want? We can't compete with Florida. We can't compete with Vegas.
Yeah,
but put your stake in the ground.
It's also it's also on the players too, Frankie. Frankie, you've been in these locker rooms. I mean, it's got to be on the players to a certain extent.
Yes,
because
it does.
We know what happened in Toronto is you had four different players with four different agents, all sort of trying to be the man, and the agents wanting to one up each other in one way or another. You know, and then
we
got to
get back into this.
Yeah.
We got to run. We'll come back. We got Nathan Rourke coming up in about 20 minutes. Alex Schiffer of The Athletic down in Brooklyn as well in this KD report. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right. So if you've been online at any point, you know, in the last 24 hours, you've heard the song. This is the walkout track for Edwin Diaz, the closer for the Mets. And it's been getting a lot of love. The Mets have been playing so well. He's been pitching so well. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. I support it. I think every closer should have access to a track coming into the game in their own park. Basically, it's Wild Thing, right, in Major League. And that's it. Like, you can't have Trent Thornton having his own song. Like, get in there, Trent, throw your pitches, get the hell out. But a closer is different. A closer is someone that people gravitate to. A closer you can promote.
Yep.
I love it.
Yeah.
I support it.
That's part of the entertainment value, too.
Exactly.
Right? Like, that's,
build it up.
Yeah.
Here
that
it comes.
If I'm a fan and I'm at a game and the ninth inning is coming around and I hear that music, whatever it is, I'm pumped,
New York
man.
Knows Enter Sandman, right?
Yeah.
Rivera had it forever.
I was going to say.
Exactly.
The Enter Sandman. But I think that saw, like, when you saw that point of view video the Mets produced of him coming out of the bullpen, like, that is a cool moment when you come, here it comes. And when you come out and to that song into a packed stadium to the raucous ovation, like, that's what makes it electric, right?
It's
incredible.
Like,
it's one of the great moments in sports.
It's so cool. Yeah, and there's something about the closer, man. It's the position that everyone wants to focus on. You're the man. You're coming in, you're shutting down the lights, and you're the man. I love it. I support it. Every closer in baseball needs it. Hour three coming up. Nathan Rourke will join us of the BC Lions. And back into this Kevin Durant report. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.